These words of Margaret Wheatley: as we work together to restore hope to the future, we need to include a new and strange ally, our willingness to be disturbed, our willingness to have our beliefs and ideas challenged by what others think. No one person or perspective can give us the answers we need to the problems of today. Paradoxically, we can only find those answers by admitting that we don't know. We have to be willing to let go of our certainty and expect ourselves to be confused for a time. We weren't trained to admit that we don't know. Most of us were taught to sound certain and confident, to state our opinion as if it were true. We haven't been rewarded for being confused or for asking more questions rather than giving quick answers. We've also spent many years listening to others mainly to determine whether we agree with them or not. We don't have time or interest to sit and listen to those who think differently than we do. But the world now is quite perplexing. We no longer live in those sweet, slow days when life felt predictable, when we actually knew what to do next. We live in a complex world. We often don't know what's going on, and we won't be able to understand its complexity unless we spend more time in not knowing. I don't know about you, but I am so happy to be here today. So happy to be part of this loving and challenging community. So happy to be alive. Blessed are you poor, our reading said today. How happy are you poor, a more contemporary translation of the words of Jesus reads. Why? For the kingdom of God is yours. Happy to be poor. Happy to be alive. This is a critique of our spiritual ancestors among the left wing of the church reformers, our own forebears. We sang about them when we opened the service. Our own forebears thought that this world was divided between the elect and the damned. I did not point that out among you, I'm just saying that in general. The ones chosen for all time to enjoy the pleasures of heaven, and the ones who, God knowing since the beginning of time or before time, that they would be headed for hell. Our ancestors, some of our ancestors, actually thought that the material success and the good reputation and refinement and wealth were indicators of who probably was among the elect. I mean, those people needed to live that way because they needed to get used to going to heaven. And the poor, abject, uncultured people on the bottom, well, they weren't so far from getting used to what it meant to live in hell forever and ever. Their misery was an indicator that they were going to hell. You poor people, you are happy, Jesus said. Their poverty was not an indicator that they were to be among the damned. Somehow, in ways that maybe they did not understand, in ways that the wealthy certainly could not understand, the realm of God was theirs. The full expression of heaven belonged to the poor. Our ancestors had a lot of things right, in their affirmation of the power of reason to figure a way out in this world, in their embrace of community with a shared sense of purpose, even in their daring to challenge authority, to cross oceans, to find places and ways that they could experiment with their ideas. But some things they got wrong. Elect and damned? Not right. Not right, some of our other ancestors within that community proclaimed. They raised a critique against the way things were and said that there had got to be another way. A critique that said that the love of God was so great that none would be damned. All would be welcomed into the fullness of the rule and realm of God. I don't know about you, but I am happy to be here today. I am happy to be loving you. I'm happy to be challenging you. 2 years ago, our church challenged itself to ask some questions about the ways we wanted to be in the world, who we were to each other, who our neighbors were, and how we knew them, and how it was we wanted to function with each other and out into the world. For 2 days, after months and months of planning, we met in a deep and rich conversation, a loving conversation with one another. And we created a list of 10 right things that would form some of the framework for our life together. Now, anytime you discover something new, anytime you posit a way that you want to be, implicitly you're critiquing the way you are. So every time we're about organizing ourselves and rethinking who we are, we're disorganizing, we're unorganizing who we were. And there's always some tension there. And maybe Margaret Wheatley's encouragement that we learn how to be upset, we learn how to, not upset, but for our thoughts to be turned on their heads without us being personally attached and upset, maybe that kind of moving forward, maybe that kind of critique, we can learn to appreciate. We can learn to appreciate, not exactly knowing. I knew who I was, but I changed, my context changed, and so who I need to be might be a little different. And so there might be a little critique. There is a critique in creating this thing of the 10 right things. There's a critique, but it doesn't mean we need to take it personally, and it doesn't mean we need to be offended. We just need to accept it and hear it, and learn to listen to it, not to respond to it, but just to listen to it and know it in its truth. We realized that there were ways where we simply didn't know each other fully. Some might say that we weren't really happy with each other. And so we promised ourselves we'd fill our life together with fun. That's one thing we said we would do. We don't know each other as people of fun, and so we will fill our lives with fun together, and it will be a way of us going forward. We realized that some of our work in the world was not sufficiently intentional. We were doing it kind of out of ideas and kind of out of politics and kind of out of habit, and we wanted to say, no, this is a spiritual community, a religious community. And so we want to more fully embrace the religious content of the way we are in the world. And so we put that into our 10 right things. And we knew that we were doing incredible work for justice. But we wondered, what might it be like if we could create not a lot of good things, but a unified program that would bring the congregation together, young and old, newer members and older members, committees as they are, committees as they might be, and galvanize our participation in each other's lives and in a work in the world. We brought together leaders of three important constituencies of our congregation to think together for months about how we might create such a galvanizing ministry. We brought together the Social Action Clearinghouse, which is one of the ways we conserve and develop the people resources that we have with one another. We brought together the Kin Bequest Oversight Committee, which organizes some of our money resources and makes recommendations to the board about some of the ways we use our money. And we had a member of the board itself in the committee to say that this is how serious this is, that people from our governing board would participate fully in this kind of three-legged stool dialogue between people resources and money resources and our essential vision. These three constituent groups came together over a period of several months. They consulted the congregation by making a social action triptych that we were invited to imagine together what a future might be with one another. We had a half a day consideration together that we kind of likened to an architect's charrette, where you put some ideas out there and talk with each other about what's on the table. And finally, we made a recommendation to the board that we would focus for the next 3 years on social justice action for and with the poor by establishing a poverty and homelessness ministry. We worked hard to get to that place. And in working hard and getting to that place, we saw how rich we are. We saw the generosity of spirit of people. We saw a willingness to allow ourselves to be challenged by each other. We saw a willingness to dig deep and say, yes, the way we show concern for the poor, not just the poor out there, but the poor who are in and among us, that is an indicator about what we think about the whole world. This is how we respond to what does it mean to be a human being, and what might it mean to be a society that aspires toward justice. And the reward for that conversation was the constituting by the board and the charging by the board to go full speed ahead with a poverty and homelessness ministry, with the hope that this ministry would guide our people resources and our money resources, and that it would galvanize congregational participation. Many committees, many ad hoc projects, many ages, many interests, many partners inside the church and out. I am so happy to be here today. I am so happy to have this congregation as a place where I can make meaning out of my precious life. So happy for this one wild, extended experience, which is my life. There's an interesting study recently released that charted attitudes about ministry to the poor by religious communities. The study grouped attitudes along two poles. On the one hand, ministry to the poor was about charity and service, and on the other hand, ministry to the poor was about restructuring society to create possibilities of justice. And then they organized religious communities by theology and ethnicity. And what they discovered is it was Latino Catholics that most identified the mission of the church around the poor with social restructuring. And it was white evangelicals who most said that the mission to the poor is about acts of charity and service. The social profile most like our church, I would say, in this study, was the Protestant mainline, which was about two notches in from the white evangelicals. The Protestant mainline preferred charity and service at 60%. Over social justice restructuring at 38%. Interestingly, the black churches, Protestant churches, like the ones we partner with in our congregation-based community organization that we actually lead, Bridge Maryland, are about a point or two away from the Latino Catholics, preferring social restructuring over charity and service by about 61% to 37%. Now, this may be related to a theology of liberation. The Latinos in the Latin American theology of liberation had a sense that God was so in solidarity with the poor that an expression of a love for God is creating social systems that would lift up the poor, because that's what they heard Jesus saying. Not giving the poor some service, but lifting up the poor, lifting up the possibility of people being the agents of their own lives, because God so loved people that God actually came and was a poor person. God came and was an unwed mother. God came and was a person who had lost everything and was making a living day to day by doing carpentry. Carpentry, by the way, was a terrible social location in the time of Jesus. It meant you didn't have the capacity to have the farm anymore. You lost everything, and so you're going door to door fixing people's windows and doors, fixing a table. It was a terrible job. It was an awful existence. And so God was actually among the very poor and tells us in this theology that we need to be about changing society so that the poor are able to be lifted up. And black liberation theology is right next to it. Black liberation theology that said you can't trust just the acts of charity of someone else, but that you have to be about organizing one another, making a demand with one another, throwing off the shackles yourselves and helping others throw off their shackles. When Frederick Douglass vowed to work with women for women's right to vote and other elements of women's liberation, that came out of a theology that said we as a people know that justice is about lifting ourselves up and lifting other people up. So I can hear the remnants of that theology in that perspective that says 2-to-1, social justice work among the poor is about changing society. And it's interesting to hear on the wider end of things, which is the more prosperous end of things, that having the capacity to do acts of charity is the way that we're going to change things for the poor. Bishop Christer Stendahl, I had a conversation with him before Christmas one year when he had been thinking about Advent themes. And he talked about justice and mercy being one coin with two sides. And he said, what side of the world are you on? If you're the oppressed, then you're going to say, God, justice, justice, justice. And if you're the person who has the capacity in the system that you're on top, you're going to say, God, I know I'm here. Please be merciful to me. Right? So, depending where you are, this whole question of service and charity and social restructuring, they're all part of what we need to be doing. And I think that's my challenge to us as we think about the poverty and homelessness ministry. How do we kind of balance so that everybody feels that there's a place for them and therefore galvanize congregational participation? There are five areas I believe that our poverty and homelessness ministry must address. Direct service is one. And to the extent that we are able to provide a service, I will tell you that inviting families from Dayspring to come and be with us for our Halloween party is about who we are as an open and generous community, is about a people who love each other and have fun, and is about a people who are open to being with people, learning their stories, knowing who they are, being transformed by their presence. It was a service that we gave, yes, but we brought a very rich content to it of solidarity. Philanthropy is a second way. And you know, there's an interesting thing. As I've talked to young adults in our congregation, there are people who wonder why we aren't more philanthropic. Not, by the way, saying, can't we use more of our trust funds to do this or that, or can we more correctly use money that someone else gave us, but saying, how come we don't do more benefits? How come we don't say that we're going to get together and we're going to throw a party and we're going to raise $2,000 and it's going to go to this project? So that notion of philanthropy, not just giving away someone else's money well, but actually organizing ourselves to be a generous and philanthropic people. It's an interesting question, and a number of young adults, and we're observing this kind of generational divide, who are really more... who are totally willing to organize an event, advertise it through social media, and suddenly 400 people show up, and it's like, I don't know if I can say kick-ass in the pulpit, but that if I could, it would be something like that. Education is a third mission, both as learners and as teachers, and so I imagine that this ministry will have opportunities for learning, will have lectures, will have films, but will have, I hope, that we'll actually establish a time after church, maybe once a month on a Sunday, that will be a way that we can more fully embrace what the Poverty and Homelessness Ministry is up to in its many, many manifestations. Prophetic witness and advocacy is clearly a fourth. Sometimes the witness is putting a banner out front, which we did for years with Marriage Equality. Thank you, we did it. It was great. We won. Advocacy also is showing up and testifying. What does advocacy mean? Vocare is to call, to speak. Ad is for. So to speak for the voiceless is what advocacy is about, and that's an important thing. But then the fifth thing, organizing, is to getting the voiceless to speak for themselves, to getting the ones who don't have access to the things that we have access to be able to speak their aspirations. They don't need to be advocated for, they can speak themselves. So I hope that those five things, direct service, philanthropy, education, prophetic witness and advocacy, and organizing, are all part of what we do. All these, we imagine, will come together in a broad ministry which will bring together the substantial resources of this community, people resources, such as those organized by our Social Action Clearinghouse, and money resources, such as those overseen by our Kin Bequest Oversight Committee, and even the resources of, believe it or not, our competent and excellent professional staff who want to serve this church and to serve this ministry. We imagine a broad ministry that will help us be effective as a congregation, optimistic and generous in our living, and even happy. How happy I am to be part of this community and its work. How happy that we will have fun together and aspire together to make meaning in the world. How happy to know that there is a love that is greater than any of us, that is working among us to allow us to be greater than the challenges that face our lives. How happy that we are willing to take a chance with each other in growing together as a spiritual community with a purpose, with optimism, and with a sense that we ourselves will grow as we engage the task. Then I think we might even know the overwhelming power of love. Then I think we may begin to have a glimpse of the rule and realm of God. Blessed be. Amen.